previously.tv podcast network.
That's what gives me so much hope, is to see all three of you guys, and you have such different personalities, but you stood your ground, you did what you had to do, and look at you guys now.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 206 for the week of June 4th, 2018. I am ruler of the dodgeball killing field, Call BOGO, David T. Cole, and I'm here with venture capitalist slash chicken, Sarah D. Bunting.
It's called Anjuenity.
Overcomplicated entrance maker, Tara Ariano.
I'm on an ox.
And social media participant, Diablo Cody.
Slide into my DMs and sell me tooth whitener.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. We have a very special guest. All of our guests are special, of course, but this is our first Oscar winner. Please welcome Diablo Cody. Yay!
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Oh, I'm super psyched.
This was a long time in the making because you are very busy, but also because all of the ideas that I had pitched you for lead topics were not appealing until I remembered that The Bachelorette was coming back and that you are an on-the-record fan of the show and of the franchise, having been quoted in Amy Kaufman's Bachelor Nation, which Sarah and I just recently read. And I would like to start by asking, one of the things that you wrote in your were quoted as saying in the book was that you watch it because it's fun to watch stupid people mate. I feel like this is why most people watch the show. Where would you rank Becca in terms of stupid people mating on the show? Like, what tier of stupid do you think she is?
Here's the thing. I actually think Becca seems fairly intelligent, and I might just be biased toward her because she's from the Midwest. She's Minnesotan. She has that like salt of the earth kind of thing going on, and she seems fairly intelligent, and she can really pull off a plunging neckline, which I know isn't correlated with IQ, but I don't think she's the dumbest we've ever seen. I'll put it that way.
Who do you think is the dumbest? Now I have to know.
Oh man. I feel so bad. I'm going to put, you know what I'll say? She's a lovely girl. I don't think JoJo is a brain trust. beautiful.
She is very pretty.
But
go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, Becca, and I actually think Becca's suitors this year actually seem a little more intelligent than usual, aside from that model guy, but I'm sure we'll get to
him. I was going to say, like, you're talking dummies. You can't go, we're stopping at that model. I mean, he is from 30 Rock. He is the sex idiot.
he is the sex idiot. Oh my God. I did like that thing though. Like, you know, last night he came strutting out in his underwear and he said something I've never heard before that I think he might've invented, which he was like, yeah, I got brass balls. What did he say? Like click, clack, look at that or something. He had like a catchphrase having to do with his brass balls that I thought was kind of great.
Oh yeah.
We're talking about
Jordan. No, I can't remember it now.
Yeah. I'm glad nobody remembers it because...
Man,
I just love that, like, he's at the rose ceremony and he's in like this dusty peach chenille, like total nana throw. And she gets a rose and she's like, where do I put it? And it's like, just put it through his nipple. Just go ahead. I mean,
they're in the house where they live. You could go and get dressed before the rose ceremony, but he doesn't.
This guy's the breakout star. Come on, guys. Like, this, like when this guy leaves is I hope eliminated from the competition for Becca's sake, not for mine. Like the quality of this season is going to like half at least.
Yeah. Dave, when he came out, it called him a Ryan, like said, he's like Roman from Party Down. He is 100% a Ryan Hansen character, but in real life, it's amazing.
Yeah. I love him though. Like I always love the dum-dums. I hate it that the like novelty characters never make it to the end. Like just once I would like the Bachelorette to pick like Santa Claus or someone who's just there to be a clown. Do you know what I mean? And they never do.
Right. Well, we also going into this season have, well, two storylines that are already emerging. First, the one that the show is selling, which is Becca was wronged, but she was wronged by the show. And I feel like it's not fair of the show to sell out Ari like this one. Clearly, like it was not his idea to dump her on camera. And so I feel like the show is trying to have it both ways by like putting this horrible moment on TV at the end of the last season of The Bachelor, where, as we saw in the early moments of the premiere, you know, she got screwed over, but then also like making her the office Tina Turner, to quote Seinfeld, by having her come back and like shit on Ari every chance she gets and smash TVs with his face on them and all that. Like, do you think it did this make you feel bad for Ari at all? Or is he irredeemable, Diablo?
No, I'm not an Ari fan. But I do think the show is obviously trying to have it both ways. Like they emotionally abused Becca, and now they're like, oh, Ari's the worst. And it's like, actually you guys were the ones pulling the strings that allowed that like 45 minute ghastly humiliation to happen. On that gray couch. But I have to say, like, the date last night where she, you know, smashed all the Ari stuff was to me the best date they've ever had. And I know that's a bold statement.
No, I think that's fair. That's a place that they went there on couples therapy too.
It was Little John there.
Yeah,
that was
with Lil. Okay, wait. One of the best edits I've ever seen in the show was when they cut to the insert shot of Lil John queuing up the Bachelor music. Yeah. When they started, they cut from like Turn Down for What to like the sad piano, and they showed Lil John controlling the audio cue. Which is like the weirdest thing they've ever done on the show. I actually rewound it. My husband was like, you're mentally ill.
Did they show it, or did they just show a pair of hands moving that
they
slider?
Did. They showed a pair of hands, but like,
it's still Hollywood magic either way. I'm just,
you know. You don't think it was actually Lil Jon agreeing to like stick around?
That was definitely a day later. Yeah. Somebody had to figure out after the fact. Yeah.
Okay.
So Becca, this whole thing with Ari though, for me seems like, and this is what I call pigs in my mom's kitchen, which is when you don't really know somebody and you have to give somebody a gift, and somewhere down the line, society has decided that this person enjoys X. So a friend came in and saw that my mom had two pig figurines on a shelf in my kitchen. She decided, well, she loves pigs. I'll get her a pig for her birthday. And then smash cut 5 years later, the kitchen is covered in pigs. My mom is complaining, why the fuck is everybody giving me pigs? When you only know one thing about somebody and you don't really know them at all, but that still defines
it, becomes
your picture
of them.
That's the Ari relationship with Becca. Like, this show and everybody on this show can only relate to Becky through getting dumped on national TV by Ari. And she says it's time to move on. The host says it's time to move on. You know, the therapist behind the scenes says it's time to move on, but neither the show nor the men will let her move on. And she actually isn't letting herself move on either. She keeps on bringing it up. But like, two episodes in, I feel like Ari's mentioned every 5 minutes on average. And
yeah,
it's time to move past it. Like, it's actually kind of,
oh yeah.
Like, the Turn Down for What segment was kind of great just because it was cathartic and looked super fun. And I really want to go to one of those. I don't know if those businesses still exist. Like, that was the escape room business of like 2009 was smash shit up. I don't know if they're still around.
Wait, I wasn't even aware that that was an actual thing you could do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe I shouldn't have been so impressed. I was like, oh my gosh, can you believe how innovative and cool that was? And now you guys are like, no, everybody has smashed shit up. That's a thing.
If it's anywhere, it's probably still in LA. So, you know, get out the other pages, take a look. But
I could go to that actual one.
This is one of the things about the show. That's an excellent way of putting it, David T. Cole. But this is one of the things about the show that I both find extremely frustrating, but also extremely compelling. Like, this is one of the reasons that I sort of hate watch it, is going back to the Brad Womack, diptych of seasons, and how in the second season they were really acting like, by not asking either of the women at the end to marry him, that he had licked them with like a leukemia tongue and then thrown them in a volcano. Like, he actually did the entire world a favor, and your brand also. Like, you're welcome, The Bachelor, because they've been getting storylines out of that one guy for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And now he's trying to disappear, but that's a whole other thing, and I don't blame him.
It's impossible to disappear unless you're Alex Michelle, the first Bachelor who nobody can track down.
That's a weird story.
That is weird. That's some Illuminati shit right there. Mm-hmm. I kind of want that to be like a true crime podcast now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, with the whole Ari situation, it's like every chooser in latter seasons is someone who got fucked over by someone else. So the only difference with Becca really is that she got dumped on live TV after he had chosen her versus all of the other women who just got dumped on not live TV when, you know, in the normal course of events through rose ceremonies. So it's sort of like, I mean, this is the other thing that I think is disingenuous about the way the show is acting about Becca and Ari. It's like, this is what you do all the time. Like, this is not really, other than her humiliation in that instance, it's not that different from what happens to every other person.
Well, it's like Dave said, it's like the only thing they have. Like, it's not like there's anything like, look, this is not a diss on Becca, but there's like just not much about her that's fascinating. Like, she doesn't have like a job with a hook or anything like that.
Right.
She's not a race car driver.
Right.
So it's like the only thing they have, like they have the pig in the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? So they just have to keep revisiting it. Although I hope last night's smashing sledgehammer date was like commentary on that. And it was like, okay, the end.
Right. Right. But do we think it will be? I bet not.
You know, you're talking about Becca, you know, and, you know, who is she? What always confounds me and amazes me about the first couple episodes of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette is how, you know, at least on camera in pre-love, all the contestants are with these, let's face it, very vanilla people. Mm-hmm. The way that they talk about her, like they already know that she is soulmate material or at least soulmate adjacent. Episode one, it is so creepy.
It's to me. The whole premise is screwed up.
I know. And
like, it's, yeah.
But, you know, because we're in America, now there is a TV show that's like, are these guys not falling in love with this person quickly enough? Well, fuck you, Bachelor. Now here comes the proposal from ABC.
Oh, I can't wait.
1 hour, they're married. Go. Like, there's going to be a show next year where people, there's two conveyor belts and they meet in the middle of the room and the thing just says married and that's it. That's the show. Like, it's crazy how much they expect us to believe that there is chemistry going on, that there is actual, you know, they're actually in the hunt on episode one.
This is something that Bachelor Nation, which I read in one day, that day was yesterday, ask me anything, really gets into. And, you know, Kaufman talks to a lot of the contestants about this feeling of complete disorientation, that you're not around anything except the show. You're not watching any news. You're not allowed to have any devices. You're not allowed to read. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to go to the gym and accidentally watch a TV.
You can't listen to music.
You can't listen to Google. You can't Google yourself. You can't listen to music.
You have to eat blindfolded.
I mean, there's sort of like, it's sort of unclear as to whether, but like the only thing you have to think about is the game. And I think that like my notes from last night's episode are like, in all caps, wait, is Lincoln actually crying? Is this actually happening? Because another thing that I think is super interesting about The Bachelorette, which like I tend to like these seasons better because these dudes who by and large are dudes who have pretty, let's say, traditionalist ideas about ladies, to which I do not conform, will act like my classmates at the girls' school where I spent 12 years. And I'm like, all right, girl, like there's crying, there's side eye. I'm just like, okay. Like, I think that's very interesting in terms of how the show tries to reinforce these traditional fairy tale, quote unquote, gender roles. And then the dudes are acting like everything that you would expect them to say that they disdain.
He was crying because his prom picture got thrown into the pool. Yes. Basically. Like, yes, I agree with you. That's really interesting. And by the way, he was my favorite until, and by the way, it was not cool to throw the picture in the pool, but the boohoo afterwards, I was like, we're done.
Yeah.
Like, how was he not eliminated? Like that,
the thrower
speaks volumes about Becca. I mean, you know, now that we've talked about how much cooler we are than the show, let's just actually talk about the show, which is, girl, you got to dump that guy who threw a rage fit because of some guy had a pretty picture and he didn't. Like, that is
quit
bullshit.
Quit breaking glass near the pool. There are rules.
I have a feeling he was a producer pick.
Yeah, totally.
I think she was definitely upset. And I think he was a producer pick. You know, obviously they get their selections. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to like rain on the magic of The Bachelor. But like, I think there's a chance that she maybe doesn't have complete power.
Oh, Cody,
over
I've watched Unreal. I know how it goes. Don't worry.
I know. Yeah. I'm just like
Colton. Same thing. Totally.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's. I think he's really hot. I'm sorry. I don't want to get like.
Like I get that's a producer pick, but that guy, like, he was a rage monster. Like that's. Like I think it would send a better message if they just let her just shit can him right then. Like bye.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even going to wait for the rose ceremony. Just kick your ass out now. Like, that would have been good. Especially since, like, they had this whole extended Wreck-It Ralph trailer during the show where, like, half of it was her falling into the princess room and all the princess room talking about all the terrible tropes of men and how they treat women in the Disney world. And then, like, it's happening on the... Like, it was very meta and unaware.
Yeah. No, she should have let him go at that time, because if a guy, it's just a total red flag.
Yep.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. Yes. I was also concerned about who was going to have to clean it up when it's glass and a pool. Like, it's really disrespectful.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
I actually just chose to believe that that was only Foley design and that it didn't actually break, because they didn't spring for like a real glass frame. They just went to Spencer Gifts and got some $8.99 jobby.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the dates of episode two. We already mentioned the smashy one, but Diablo, you said before we started recording you were very interested in only talking about road rules, and I assume that had to do with the obstacle course that was the first group date. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I always, first of all, I don't understand why they were doing it in formal wear. Like, they're really reaching now.
Yeah,
like, just imagining myself in like a rented tuxedo that's just getting all double dared with like schmutz is like the most unappealing thing I can imagine. She had like chocolate smeared on or whatever the hell that was. I mean, it was just disgusting. I do not like the obstacle course dates in general. And also, like, it's always strange to me that the winner of those challenges always acts like it was some kind of like emotional achievement that shows that they're a good match for the person. It's like, I don't understand what you're like. Time on the Sunday slide has to do with your compatibility with Becca.
Everyone was acting like it was, including the guys who lost, because they were like, he went ahead of where his timer went, and he shoved me when we were walking on our knees.
Cutsies. Oh my
he
god,
did cheat,
that
though.
Was ridiculous.
Like his timer was not up. Like,
but who cares? Like, the point of the game is to win Becca. It's not like this isn't the Amazing Race. Like, to me, all of that whining is just more of like the girl school shit, where it's like, it doesn't matter if someone is violating norms, if the norms are dumb to begin with. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the point
and are
of
not
the game,
norms.
Right.
Yeah.
The point of the game is to smash your opponents and get with Becca. And that's what he did. Like, if you guys were all too, you know, Democrats in Congress about it to like really go for it, that's not his fault. That's your fault, you pussies.
Here's what the Bachelorette needs to do. Now, if I was a Bachelorette, this is what I would do. You make an index, the man-child index. And for the first couple of days, you just like every time the guy does something man-child-y, you just give him a check mark. And if he hits three or four or whatever, you know, he's on the outs. I mean, this is pretty easy.
This is like how I raise my three sons. Like, so you're saying they need like a sticker, like a potty chart?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Good boy chart. Uh-huh.
I mean, because that's never going to work, right? I mean,
right.
Who wants to marry a man child? Like, nobody. Even if you think he has other characteristics that appeal to you, that man child stuff's going to sour it somewhere down the road sooner than later. So just like make your poop chart and flush him down the toilet. Bachelorette solved by David T. Cole.
Can you imagine the promo? They'd be like, this season, the poop chart.
Well, she also has a problem now, because now the meta story of this season is about Garrett, who is hateful online and faving racist and transphobic memes, and also the guy who got the first impression rose, which, as was recapped for us in the series and the season premiere, all of the previous three first impression rose recipients ended up being engaged to the Bachelorette at the end of the season. And now, so she's got to get out ahead of all this Garrett shit and say, I hope you'll give us all a chance. So it's like,
yeah,
oh,
but
you
isn't that
him.
Like, that kind of makes me worried. Yeah. I was like, oh, did he win? Because I don't think she would have even bothered to defend him otherwise.
Right. I mean, I guess she could have to say something, because if she didn't say anything, it would tip it that he wasn't picked. And like, she can't say either way. And so she has to keep the mystery alive. But I mean, I think she picked him.
I liked her little, you know, essay that she wrote about it was so fascinating to me. She was like, we have no control what we click on. And it's like, yes, we do. Like I scroll past shit that my friends post because I'm like, I don't like that outfit. Like I'm very judicious with my likes.
Of course.
I'm not just going to like something that says like women need to go back to the kitchen, like idly. So like, I feel like he needs to be accountable for it, but whatever. Like maybe she picked him. He's gross. Like, it's not cool.
I made this observation. This is very shallow, but that guy's face is so wide and angular. He really looks like a video game character skin before they wrap it around a polygon.
That, I saw that on Instagram and it is really dead on that. I was like, oh yeah. And now I can't look at him. I saw that before watching the second episode. And then I was just like pausing it and staring at him. Like, this is like one of those, sort of warehouse areas in Westworld before they put the old school
the blank AIs, robots.
Like just putting it on like an insect. Yeah.
Ooh. I was sad for Joe from that. He didn't last past the first episode. Cause to me, he was the cuter version of Garrett.
Oh,
Joe, the grocery I'm store obsessed guy.
You know, Joe's going to paradise. He was
I hope so.
He has to. He was my favorite.
He's
how
really
many
cute.
How many men do they have at the start? Cause it seemed like we were seeing people for the first time 45 minutes in and then like, they were gone. Like there was like,
well, and keep in mind, it's 28. Too, that like a lot of these guys are so completely indistinguishable from each other that it's like the cactus in the background of a Roadrunner cartoon. It's literally the same guy named That's Chris, fair. Who's just keeps going past in the background.
They're not as samey as all of the like fashy haircut guys from Joe's season, but they are very bland. They're really dull.
I mean, too many,
Lincoln
right?
at least stood out because he had an accent.
There's a lot. And that's what's also fundamentally wrong with the premise of the show is she has, you said 28, right? So she has 28 guys. And then last night she was crying saying, I'm really worried there isn't someone here for me. But when she was on Ari's season, they offered her one guy. And she was like, I want to spend the rest of my life with him. Mm-hmm. Like I don't understand. I guess they're just using like psychological warfare to get these women all interested in this one dude or all the dudes interested in this one woman. But it's just like, I don't understand how it works.
Well, I think there's like, at first there's just cutting you off from the outside world so that the only thing that you have to think about, you care about it. And then after a while, like then once you're sort of like trained, that's when you leave the mansion and you start traveling and you would have maybe a little more access to other things to think about. But by that time, it's now you're onto sunk costs theory.
Right.
That it's like, well, if I get to hometowns, then like, let me at least win this thing.
Yeah.
I just don't know why more people don't just walk away and say, I'm not feeling it. But I guess, you know.
My theory was simpler than Sarah's, which was this just a under the dome situation where they just convince them that they're never leaving and they really do have to make a choice.
But honestly, I think it's like it's so much of it is about the self-selection of the sort of person who would do this in the first place. You know, like if you're someone who would sign on for this, there's already something wrong with you. I say that every season when we talk about the show on the podcast, but I really do think that like there's something fundamentally like broken or damaged or like weird about you. If you would see this, if you would ever watch like 10 minutes of the show in your life, never mind every season and say, yes, that is how I'm going to find my spouse.
But Tara.
Yes, Dave.
Are you not entertained?
Of course. Yes. It's
the world needs grave diggers and sex idiots. That's the tagline for The Bachelor.
I mean, whoever they get to edit the super tease that plays at the end of the premiere, it deserves a Peabody Award because it makes season look so fascinating. And then when you actually watch it, it's like, oh, those were like 2 minutes of highlights from 700 minutes of show.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the highlights of Jordan at the end of episode one, where they just had all these ball malls.
Oh, the closing credits. Yeah, that too.
That was amazing. That was
like, the great thing about... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go.
No, I was just saying like those super teasers, they're incredible. And I like there's always an ambulance shot, but like they won't fool me again because so rarely is it somebody actually got knocked out. Like usually it's like something so dumb, like someone faked a panic attack so that Caitlin would take him to the hospital or some bullshit like that. And it's like, I used to get excited. They used to bait me that way. I'd be like, yes, ambulance, can't wait to see a fight. And then it just, they never deliver. Like, yeah. Bad Chad delivered. Nobody else ever delivers.
Oh, Chad.
Bad Chad.
Yeah. I stand for Chad. So
he was an all-star for sure.
Yeah, he was, yeah. But I met him and it was awful.
Bentley.
Oh no.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, I shouldn't be surprised. Like, I don't understand why I expected him to be like a delightful human being. But like, I thought maybe he was like in on the joke, and indeed he is not.
Oh, well, that's not surprising, I guess.
So no. Let's wrap it up with our want to win, think we'll win predictions. And Cody, sorry, Diablo, as our guest, do you want to make a prediction there?
You know, I like that you call me Cody, like Kathy Lee Gifford's son. I think my prediction here's, I think the guy who liked the bad stuff, Garrett, is that his name?
Garrett.
I think he's going to win. The person I would like to win is Blake, who she had the date with last night and who started crying because a girl ghosted him after 2 months of dating.
Right.
Because I thought that they had a nice connection.
Mm-hmm. He was also the guy who was on the horse in After the Final.
Yeah, I liked
him.
So
he's a prop guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a prop guy.
Sarah.
I kind of want Cal Bogo to win because he's been throwing some quality shade in the Talking Head interviews. And here's the where it gets complex for me as a viewer. There's always a couple of dudes or ladies every season that I'm like, I like you. And like, I want you to be too cool to be on the show, except you're on this show.
Yeah.
And that person ended up winning the Sean Lowe season, quote unquote, winning. But yeah, I kind of like that. He's like, this is ridiculous. And if she's not into long hair, then she might as well eliminate me right now. Like he does seem to have some good insights, and he's a stunt guy, which is like a legit interesting stories job. Like I would like to hang out with him. Mm-hmm. And between the two man bun guys, he's like, I would pick him, but he is not going to win. And in fact, I'm a little surprised that he's still,
I'm surprised
there.
He's still there
he
too.
Is, right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Garrett, and I think it's down to Garrett and Jordan and someone named Chris, because that's like the law. It's like a Malibu statute, like you must bring a Chris to hometowns.
You think Jordan's going to go the distance? Or
yeah, you're crazy. No way.
Such idiot.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
I'll bet you both won American Die.
So here's the thing, like the sex idiot occupies the same slot as the, you know, the prickly pear question of when can I safely and socially acceptably eliminate the person of the other race I really don't want to go to distance with thing, right? Where you can't do it right away. You don't want it to go more than half. So it's just before the half mark, and it's consistently just before the half mark. So I think that's where sex idiot's going to go. Mm. You know, she really doesn't want him in the picture. Producers want, and they're going to be able to keep him there as long as possible, which is going to be about the half point.
Mm-hmm. I think Dave is right. And he's also so fussy that he like barely is paying attention to her. Like he's just really playing. He's playing the other guys more than he seems to care about her at all.
What did you say he was modeling for because he was from Florida?
Oh, I said Mervyn's, but I think that's only in California. So I changed it to Kohl's.
But guys, last night he said near the end of the episode, he specifically said he was a Wilhelmina model, which shocked me. Isn't that like a legit agency?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Can we fact check this? Because I'm like, really? Like, does Wilhelmina have like a special division for people who aren't that hot?
Or it's spelled differently?
Oh, yeah.
There's like a U in it.
There's an actual real agency with like actual models. That's why I was stunned when he said it, because I assumed he was modeling for, like, I don't know, prosthetic arms or something in like a medical catalog, like at best.
All right. My picks.
Clip it. Nose hair tweezers. Yeah. Sure.
I also think that Garrett is the winner, but I think it's going to come down to him and Lincoln, because I think they're going to want to keep up the Nick Vile aspects of Lincoln being like a dirty player who's not in it for the right reasons and blah, blah, blah. I think he's going to stay for a long time. That's my guess. Nick is burned for this franchise now. Like they can't possibly even bring him back to Bachelor in Paradise at this point. So they need a new Nick. And I think it could be Lincoln. So that, not that I necessarily want him to win. Want to win would probably be Dave the chicken guy as much as I hate the chicken thing. He seems cute and normal.
Chicken Dave.
What is the timeline though of discovering Garrett's, you know, social media posts and stuff? Like, would it have happened during the taping of the season, or was it well after?
No.
So well it all after. Happened after. Okay. Well, yes. Gosh,
that she would, will have. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be bad for the show if he actually got picked. But given what you guys are saying about reactions, it seems like it's possible. I think if it was a definite early exit for him, they would have been stronger worded probably. So I think he's probably going to go a ways. Now, my choice is going to be Jean Blanc.
The colonosaur.
The colonosaur, which is ridiculous. Ridiculous part of it. But he seems nice. And every time he appears on the screen, I like to say Hooch be crazy, because he kind of looks like Hooch from
Scrubs.
So that's why I want him to win. Seems like a nice guy, except like, what is up? Like, how is collecting cologne a profession? Is he like, is he beanie babying it? Is he like hoarding it to resell?
Blockchain. Cologne blockchain.
Yeah, I did like when he was saying, like, I can just, you know, really focus on my love life instead of my career. Like, you don't have a career. Your career is smell.
And on that note.
It's time for Around the Dial. We're going to talk about things we're watching on TV lately. Tara, you're up.
I watched the first two episodes of Dietland, which aired back to back on AMC this Monday night as we record this, based on a novel, which I did not read. And the show was adapted by Marty Noxon, divisive figure, most recently of Unreal. It's intriguing. It revolves around a character whose name is Plum. She is a plus size woman who is trying to lose weight because she has to get down to a certain weight before she can have weight loss surgery. And she's struggling because, spoiler, dieting is fucking hard. But she makes it clear at the beginning of the first episode that this is not a makeover story. And she's narrating it from the future. So a bunch of stuff is about to go down. And that's, you know, where we are. We join her in the past. She writes the letters. She answers letters to the editor for a magazine called Daisy Chain, posing as the editor whose name is Kitty, who is played by Juliana Margulies. And Sarah, I know you hate her and I understand, but she is leaning in on the hatefulness of her character. They have jokes in it about her looking like a wax vampire, which she kind of does. And her wig is like red and even jankier than her Good Wife wig.
Wow.
She's amazing. Like, she's a delightfully hateful character. She keeps referring to the readers as my girls, which is nauseating. And when we join her, it's at the point where the magazine has been hacked. A bunch of private information has gotten out and they're trying to solve it. And so there's also a detective and he seems like he might be interested in Plum, but she kind of dismisses him because she assumes that he's just a chubby chaser. And we also find out in the second episode that she's a virgin. So she has like some hangups and stuff. And we also get her glimpses at her inner life in the form of like animated sequences. And the animated version of her is like, you know, way bigger and way more hideous. Like, not that she's hideous, but it's like an awful projection of like how she sees herself. So there's also a kind of mystery going on of like a kind of a scum group that is gathering up and killing terrible men, including a very, very, very thinly veiled Terry Richardson, which approve. You know, the mystery stuff is so far less interesting to me, but it's good. It's like, it's interesting. I'm dreading the think pieces about like, it's such a great time for plus size women on TV. There are two, which I'm sure is coming with her and Chrissy Metz. But yeah, it's intriguing. It's not like anything else. Like Unreal, the previous Marty Noxon show, it takes place in female spaces and takes them seriously. And, you know, the stakes feel big, even though they're not like, it's not a cop show or whatever else usually happens on like male centered prestige TV shows of our time. So Sarah, I think you might even like it despite the Juliana Margulies aspect. It's interesting.
I feel like I should clarify that. I liked Carol Hathaway for a long time. It was when her characters tend to get to a certain point, usually coinciding with the assumption of the executive producer credit, where there's a sanctimony.
Yeah.
I mean, you see this happening with Mariska Hargitay on SVU the last few years too, that, I think people are not telling these actors the things that you insist on having your character do are perhaps not not the most flattering, like this Mary Sue-ness and sanctimony is
right,
not a good
right,
look.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that Margulies is good at her job. And I wish that she could just have her normal hair, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
But I would try this out because I think if she's supposed to be repellent, that's different from we're supposed to root for this character who I kind of want to, you know, just play that gif of Diane slapping her face like 20 times. Like, that's not what you're going for, probably. And that could have just been me. But anyway, that's my position.
Well, I'll also say Tamara Tooney, also from SVU, plays the woman who's in charge of the beauty closet in the basement of this magazine complex. And she's part of this revolutionary group, and she's great. So
sweet.
That's Dietland. For my plugs, I will say for the very last time, it's finally the ATX Festival this week. So come and see me if you wish to see me debate matters of television or moderate a panel about composing for TV. And I will also mention this week's Will and Grace and Kevin and Tara podcast is about the episode Alley Cats. This is the season 1 episode where Will and Grace get into a fight with their friends Rob and Ellen because Ellen is not having fun at their game nights. And it's all about how incredibly competitive Grace is at all of the games they play to a psychotic extent. And it's surprise. One of my favorite episodes of the show. So Kevin and I really had a fun time talking about that.
Now, the first person to ever use double dare as a verb on the show, Diablo Cody, it's your turn.
Hello. Well, I'm actually sort of deeply ashamed. Like, I'm feeling like waves of shame right now about what I'm about to talk about.
No.
Here's the thing. I don't watch a lot of scripted television because it's like a busman's holiday for me.
Sure.
Because I get very stressed out. It either makes me feel competitive and jealous, like I wish I had watched the show, or like I wish I had written on the show, or I worry like I'm going to be influenced. I don't know. It's just like a crazy thing. So I watch a lot of reality TV, and right now I am watching one that is very close to my heart, which is Jersey Shore Family Vacation. And I know that this is not prestige television. I know that it's like utter garbage, but for me, it's like soul food.
I saw a critic on Twitter say today it was the most fascinating show on television. So proceed. You are definitely
okay. Good.
I don't think she's the first guest to talk about it either. I feel like someone a few weeks ago.
Oh, maybe Bobby. I know he's watching it too. Bobby Finger is watching it.
So
could have been him.
You're amongst friends.
Yeah.
Trashy friends.
Watching it in our house is an interesting experience because my husband, Dan, is an Italian American from Seaside Heights, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
So he grew up among these people. Uh-huh. And he was like the guy who rejected all that and escaped because he's, you know, intelligent. But so he has like a really interesting take on like the whole, like, I mean, he was like in it, like his uncle owns the bar where Snooki got punched.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
So
that's
Dang. Yeah, we've gone back and like, you know, visited and I've been to Karma and I've been around these people and it's what's amazing to me, and like maybe this is why other people are still watching this shit in 2018, is because the chemistry with the cast is just incredible. Like, I actually buy them as a legit family at this point, which is a tough thing to accomplish. And but the similar to how, you know, the Bachelorette can't stop milking the whole sort of Ari Becca breakup, I cannot believe that 8 years into this franchise, we're still talking about Sam and Ron. Like, it's still kind of like the main topic of conversation in every episode. that Ron cheated on Sam that one time, and then Sam broke up with him. And now he's like still tortured over it, with the new wrinkle that Ron is clearly on like massive amounts of cocaine right now. Like his eye. Yeah. His eyes are like dancing around in his head. He's like grinding his teeth. He's like rambling. Like him and Snooki are staying out all night and then like continuing on for brunch. And it's like clearly not something that you can do in your 30s unless you have like Bolivian marching powder. And it's just like, it's disastrous. And then
Sammy even on the show anymore? She's not,
no,
right?
She's
Isn't
not
she like the Melania of, and I don't mean like Real Housewives of New Jersey Melania. I mean like Trump.
No, I know.
That,
I know.
That everyone's like, where's Sammy? And she's just like, and like shut down all her social media. And now she's like living in a cave.
But I kind of respect it.
Oh, like, I totally do. I'm just clarifying that's actually
no,
the case.
She's Sam did not come back, which is shocking to me because usually these people are just grasping for like any minute of screen time. Like, and the fact that she just completely turned her back on it and hasn't participated at all is fascinating to me. And so they brought like a real doll to the house that kind of looks like her, and they named it Sam.
Oh,
and
no.
It's actually, it's dark. Like they sort of like drag the doll around the house and like abuse it and like rip its wig off. And it's just like, it's a little weird, but, it's the specter of Sam certainly hovers over the proceedings at all times. And, I said, I'm not proud of the fact that I watched this show, but what's really weird about it is the train wreck used to be the situation, as we all know. Mm-hmm. Like he was the guy who literally ran into like a concrete wall on purpose during the Italy season and like broke his face. And now this season he's been sober for like almost 3 years, which is shocking. And he's like the Zen master who's like giving everybody advice and like quietly cleaning up in the background. And it's just, it's like an amazing advertisement for sobriety.
Wow. That sounds fascinating. Yeah. So, for your plugs, I will plug on your behalf the amazing Tully still in theaters, which I saw, which you wrote and was amazing. And you also have a show that is coming to Broadway, I believe.
Well, the show is currently at the American Repertory Theater in Boston. And then our plan is, you know, which is usually the plan, is we're trying to get it to Broadway for next year. But okay. It's this I'm new to the world of theater. And it's like, you basically have to wait for another show to close so you can take their theater, which is kind of dark. But like,
right. What is the name of the show? Say that because
the name of the show is Jagged Little Pill.
What's the name of the show that we just start bagging on?
Oh, the show that you want to close.
This fucking Hamilton.
Jersey Boys.
Please, come on. I think the Tonys are upon us, right? And they said that after the Tonys, shows that didn't win start to close. So now we're just rooting for people to lose.
Well, I can say past guests of the show, Joe Reed and Adam Grossworth, already have their tickets to go and see it in Boston and are very excited. So,
That makes me happy. I mean, it's like, it is, if you're an Alanis Morissette fan, it's like unmissable. Like I tried to not like stink up her music too much with my writing. So
excellent endorsement.
Thanks.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Okay. So I've spent the last few days in extra hot great prep, marinating in The Bachelorette, Bachelor Nation. And then on the flip side of that, a Laura Dern double feature, The Tale and Smooth Talk. So I'm really confused and also sort of enraged right now. That's actually my resting state. The Tale is an HBO movie that came out, I believe, last week.
Yep.
It's written and directed by Jennifer Fox, and it's basically an autobiographical, I believe, quote, investigation into her own childhood memories as she is forced to reexamine her first sexual experience, which took place with her, quote, running coach when she was 13. The girl playing her as a 13-year-old, Isabel Nalis, looks 10. It's heavy. But Laura Dern, everyone is amazing in it, but Laura Dern is particularly amazing. She's looking back at this weird relationship that was not appropriate for her to have with her running coach. The fact that her riding teacher basically procured her for the running coach. The writing is very, very smart about how much we think we know when we're teenagers versus what we actually know versus on the third hand, what we kind of know in our guts, literally in this movie, but we don't feel like we can name it. And then while I was watching this, I kept thinking about the first thing I ever saw Laura Dern in, which was this movie called Smooth Talk. It's based on a short story by Joyce Carol Oates, and it her performance in that has informed her performances for me in anything that I've ever seen her in since. She is so good in that. It also stars Treat Williams as her, I mean, attacker, I guess. Spoiler. Mary Kay, Camille Chersky plays as her mom. Mm. We were required to watch this movie in my high school just as like a warning. Basically, my school was not Catholic, but still very concerned to not let anyone get pregnant. So we went through a lot of aversion therapy type pop culture shit in health class that was designed to scare us off both peen and like basically other human beings of going outside. This did not probably have the desired effect because Treat Williams, I mean, looked like 1985 Treat Williams.
Yeah, can get it.
There. But it is the ultimate, like, your new breasts just wrote a check that you had no intention of writing and that you're still plays with Barbie's heart can't cash story. Ooh. And yeah, Dern is flawless at capturing the bitchy terror of living as a 15-year-old. It's really hard to find, but again, it's called Smooth Talk. Or you can just find the story, which is called Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been? And read it and imagine them in it, and that will be free. This was an extremely bleak double feature, but you really can't beat the performances, and especially Jason Ritter as the acting coach in the past. Really icky, really fearless, and actually brought to mind his father's brilliant turn as Ted on Buffy to a certain extent. Yeah, it's rough stuff, but thought-provoking, and maybe not a good pairing with The Bachelorette is my advice. Okay, on a lighter note, speaking of pairings, my plug is for my music podcast. It is called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Mark Blankenship and I do just that. Our last episode was about a meatloaf song, and our next one is about Smashing Pumpkins. So there's your food groups and a lighter note. Over to you, Dave.
So I watched this HBO show last night called Succession, and it's a show about a family of just super unlikable, super rich people. And I've in the past said that, you know, I love when there's like a super jerk in a TV show, but you have to have like something for the super jerk to play off. Like, people hate Richard Hatch from Survivor season one. I thought he was amazing because he had like do-gooders and people didn't know how to play the game to full effect playing against him. Succession is like all Richard Hatches. It's like there's no non-Richard Hatch in the whole show. So like, I don't give a shit. And that's as much as I actually want to talk about Succession, the show as it is, beyond the fact that it really kind of felt like a Showtime show, not an HBO show. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say it's very exciting that Succession is actually going to be the start of something on this podcast that I'm going to keep track of. And that is the By Menon Index. The Menon Index tracks TV shows that can be sung to the tag on any Menon product commercial from the 80s.
This.
To remind you of that.
When I work out, I love to sweat. It's how I get the edge. But afterwards, I want to feel dry. So Speed Stick Antiperspirant gives me an edge, too. Speed Stick's the wide stick. It goes on dry for man-sized protection in just a few strokes. Whatever game you're in, get the edge.
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant. By
Menon. Succession is now the first entry, and we're only going to do shows as they start debuting. We're not going to go in the past. So Succession, okay. You are hereby the very first Menon Index inductee. Congratulations to you, Succession. By Menon. It is time for the canon. Tara Ariano submitting this week. Take it away, Tara.
Hello, I'm presenting GLOW Season 1, Episode 7, Live Studio Audience. GLOW is the fictionalized story of the development of a women's wrestling league in mid to late 80s Los Angeles, and the first several episodes to this point have been about acquainting us with the characters involved, the washed-up film director who's creating the storylines, the wrestling fan bringing his fantasies to life with the help of his family's money, and, most intriguingly of all, the dozen women who have signed on to this weird project. Getting in everyone's way is the animosity of Debbie, a bitterly retired soap actress, toward our protagonist, Debbie's former friend Ruth, who slept with Debbie's husband before she found out he was married to Debbie, thus contributing to the end of Debbie and Mark's marriage. After many weeks of training, and if not mastering basic moves, at least kind of learning them more or less, it's time for the gorgeous ladies to put on a show for a live audience as a proof of concept for a potential backer. And here's what I think makes it canon worthy. Number one, Debbie gets over herself for the sake of the show. Obviously, it's perfectly reasonable for Debbie to bear a grudge against Ruth, but prior to this point, the show has also done a convincing job of establishing why she would choose to join the cast of GLOW in spite of Ruth. Sam specifically recruited Debbie by appealing to her ego, knowing that her hatred of Ruth could fuel savage fights. It also may be true that Debbie's departure from the acting world coincided with the birth of her infant son, Randy, but that doesn't mean it was entirely her choice or that she was ready to leave the business. Having fought it for several episodes, Debbie has accepted that Ruth's raging Soviet character is the perfect heel for Debbie's all-American Olympian. And with the show nearly upon them, Debbie can no longer act indifferent. She is just as ambitious as Ruth is, as we hear in clip one.
So, I don't want to look like an asshole on Friday.
Oh, don't be so hard on yourself. Your wrestling has really improved.
Oh, no, we're both going to look like assholes. I mean, Cherry's moves are amateur hour. You know, there's no impact, and it's not exciting. At the men's match, Steel Horse rode in on a motorcycle and did, like, backflips and shit.
You went to a wrestling match?
Yeah, you're not the only one who does research.
Well, I'll put in extra time, happily. Whenever you want, we can work around your schedule. Randy, whatever else you have going on with life.
I'm not interested in getting coffee with you or talking to you about my life, but we need to step it up, and Shaft's mom isn't going to get us there.
What is a brioche?
The correct response is, what is a brioche?
The simultaneous Jeopardy participation is such a cute character note for the diametrically different Sheila and Debbie to share. And for that to be the question they both get that the contestants don't is adorable. But it also underlines my point here. Debbie likes to win. She and Ruth approach Carmen and get her to take them to her family's house so that her brothers can teach them some moves more impressive than the lowest common denominator stuff that Cherry's been choreographing. And we hear a bit of that in clip two.
Well, we're playing the U.S. versus Russia. It's a sort of Cold War ballet.
You guys, I want to fly. I want to literally leave the ground and do some badass aerial shit. The audience is like, like slack-jawed. Maybe they shit their pants.
As a competitive person, this is the outcome I hope greets my every performance. Just kidding, not really. When she visited Ruth in her room before the Lumberjackson training montage, Debbie said she didn't want to be friends with Ruth, but spending this much time engaged in very intense, very intimate physical activity wears away some of Debbie's resentment and reminds her that she and Ruth had some good times too, as we hear in clip three.
Maybe we should have a safe word. Something we say if it's like mission abort.
Who was the that real estate guy whose name was on a bench outside your old apartment?
And Human Mabubi Farty?
Yeah. Oh, I love that name.
And we also get a reminder that Ruth is not the only pretentious show person in the house in clip four.
Is that Places?
Sure, Ruth. Places.
Thank you, Places.
Hang on, before you go any further, can you explain that to me? Obviously that's on set thing, but what is it?
Oh, it's a play thing. Oh. Like the stage manager comes and tells you. And
or like
say,
10 minutes
places.
To go.
Yeah.
Oh, thank okay. You, all right. Okay. Yes. Got it. Okay.
It's just that's your confirmation that you heard.
Understand.
So Debbie goes for it all the way with her very stereotypical character, putting it over with a cliched accent. And no, Liberty Bell is not from Maine. And we hear that in clip five.
Americans, Ronald Reagan, Larry Bird, and Jesus Christ himself.
So the choreography is going perfectly, and Ruth and Debbie are giving the audience a thrilling finale. relative to the rest of the night's entertainment. And Debbie is loving every bit of it and getting ready to cap it off by flying and making everyone shit their pants when, of course, her terrible husband Mark shows up and ruins everything. And while I'm sure it's not great for Rich Summers' self-esteem that he gets cast over and over to play these schlubby triflers, he does it so well. The point is, Debbie's story may not end where she wants it to in this episode, but her character makes a tremendous amount of progress, every bit of which feels totally earned. Number two, Carmen takes a little journey too. Carmen is the legacy of the cast. As I mentioned earlier, she's the only daughter in the famed Lumberjackson wrestling family, wrestling royalty. And Debbie and Ruth wouldn't be able to get their routine where it is for the show if not for Carmen putting them together with her brothers. We also get a brief mention of Carmen's dad, who is touring out of town while all the training is happening. At this point in the season, he has indicated that he doesn't approve of Carmen getting into the wrestling business, but he still has a journey to take as well. However, when the time comes for Carmen, wrestling name Machu Picchu, to prove herself, she gets crippling stage fright, flees the building without even getting into the ring, passes out, and requires medical attention from an ignorant EMT in clip six.
Blood pressure is normal, ECG is fine. The fainting was an extreme response to emotional distress.
But my heart?
If you're worried about your heart, why don't you give Weight Watchers a try?
Whoa!
PSA, fat people can be healthy, skinny people can be unhealthy, and even medical professionals can be wrong about this and unjustly fat shame their patients. But that's not really the point of this scene, as Bash, Glow's producer, comforts Carmen. The two of them had already had a moment in an earlier episode when Carmen's dad showed up and busted her for getting into wrestling behind his back, and Bash tried to cover for her by claiming that she had left home because the two of them were secretly dating. Tried and failed, mind you, with Carmen's dad advising her that she needed to get better at selling gags, but still. Now, Bash and Carmen bond some more in clip seven.
I've been waiting my whole life to do this. It should be in my DNA, but I didn't even make it into the ring.
You don't want to let people down. I get it. I feel like I'm disappointing a lot of people right now.
What? Everyone loves you. You're like Santa Claus.
My mom cut me off.
What are you talking about?
You know, I guess she figured out how much money I was spending on all this.
How much money were you spending?
$600,000-ish.
How did you spend that much money?
I don't know, between renting the motel and all your salaries, buying the gym.
You bought that place?
Well, it's easier than trying to figure out all the fucking paperwork.
Carmen gets closer to Bash, which is good because she's on the outs with one of her closest loved ones and she could use more allies. But now she also knows something the rest of her colleagues don't, that Bash is in way over his head and that the show could be at risk. And keeping a secret like this might be hard. All of this progresses Carmen's character too, which is great because she's one of the best. Speaking of the best, number three, Cherry continues being awesome. The very first time I watched this, I was hurt on Cherry's behalf that Debbie basically said her fight choreography was bullshit and went to Carmen's brothers for outside help. But Cherry is fine. In fact, Cherry is great. We had already met her husband, Keith, but now we get the excellent news that he has been cast as Glow's referee, a role in which he excels. During Ruth and Debbie's bout, we see him separate the combatants and angrily gesticulate at Ruth, but this is what he's actually saying, clip 8.
You guys are doing great. Do you know what happens next?
It's impossible to get across in an audio format, but the incongruity of his physicality and his lines is delightful. Keith is exactly as wonderful and supportive a husband as any of us would expect him to be after seeing this actor, the wonderful Bashir Salahuddin, as Doris's husband Malik on Looking, though I must also say I loved him back when he was a writer and sometime performer on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. Cherry also finds a way to subvert Sam's lazy racial stereotypes when he pairs her with Tammy in a tag team match against the Beatdown Biddies, clip 9.
What the fuck is happening?
No, that's not appropriate. That's not right. You can't come in here with that on. Come in here wearing a sheet.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is some inappropriate social satire. I don't know what to say.
Someone needs to teach these Casper-looking racist idiots a lesson. Be a welfare queen, but I don't tolerate no bigots.
Come on, save for the match.
All right, well, this is definitely not a match for children. Or maybe it is. Maybe you're really never too young to know about this country's racial history.
don't have a huge amount to say about Marc Maron's Sam in this episode, but his dry befuddlement at this surprise is perfect. Great job, Cherry, and great job, Cherry's velour romper. Number four, there is some process for the process nerds. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
I know you noticed that the classic training montage set to Stan Bush's Dare showed us not only the athletic techniques that Ruth and Debbie had to learn to make their bout entertaining, but how they integrate their acting skills. This is another effective part of the episode that's hard to get into in an audio format, but when Debbie nails her big jump, it's actually really exhilarating. The other process bit that comes to bear in this episode is how much Bash does not know about any of this except as a fan. He thinks the overhead lights are fine for shooting TV, or would be if Sam hadn't had his camera stolen. He supplies a Casio keyboard for entrance music, but not a pianist, requiring Sheila to play in all the wrestlers with the only song she knows. He doesn't get why it might be hard for Sam to do play-by-play while he's also supposed to be directing. I mean, this is a guy who decided to buy a gym rather than figure out lease paperwork. The episode dramatizes all the elements that go into a live wrestling show so that we may be warned that lots of other things may, no spoilers, still go wrong over the season's last three episodes. Number five, women's sports stories are the best always. A League of Their Own, Bring It On, Bend It Like Beckham, Whip It, all fucking awesome. I may hate actual sports, but I am extremely susceptible to stories of women's camaraderie in sports. Clip 10. Even something as dumb as Rhonda's rap can unite this disparate group in joyful fellowship, and the contrast between the dippy rap and the ponderous Exodus score to indicate the important artistic achievement we're witnessing is hilarious. There are a few things in this episode's deficit column. Sam and Britannica are not especially interesting to watch. Debbie's line about her jump onto Ruth being like a trust fall into the arms of someone she still doesn't trust is very on the nose. And for the sake of Sarah's vote, I wish Chris Piz from Veronica Mars Lowell had been balanced by a lot more Ellen Mouse from the Carrie Diaries Wong. But on the whole, it embodies all the aspects of Glow that I loved in its first season. And I hope you agree.
You know, I love some Mouse. Shall I begin or would you like to start, Dave?
No. After you.
This had been on my list of things to start watching for a long time, and I'm really glad that I got around to it with this. I still had not seen any episodes of Glow, and as you know, a Buncee canon criterion is that it makes me want to watch more, which I definitely did. I think it's so smart about the tropes of something like this, but also extremely warm-hearted. The training montage was both ironic and like not ironic, and also like useful and informative, which that's in this year when it does actually come out, 2017, right?
Last year, yeah.
Yeah. It's really hard to do at all, much less at this point in the pop culture timeline. There were so many good lines that I wrote down. Alison Brie is, as always, so charming. I didn't know any of the backstory about, you know, between her and Debbie, but I didn't need to because I knew they brought enough into it that I could tell what was happening. The Is That Places bit was hilarious. Marc Maron is like quite likable in this, which I have some issues with him as a, you know, pop culture creator, but not in this role. The monotone helter skelter here we come line, I was like, okay Maron, you can stay. I'm just gonna start yelling about filling swimming pools with borscht because it's perfect, but also it makes no sense, and I'm just gonna scream it like at the cats. Just gonna be like, oh, we're going outside the litter box, I will fill your litter box with borscht. And I also had a note about the Rich Summer character, like, now and forever.
Yeah.
Like, a douche. He does it so well, and he's actually such a nice human and gives really good interview, and I always feel, like, a little bad, but he's great at it.
Yep.
This was an excellent presentation. I can't wait to go back and start it from the beginning. And then I think season two is imminent. No,
it's right around the corner, June 29th. Yep.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So I just have to plow through, you know, the rest of Happy Endings and all of Killing Eve. And yeah, enough shows with Ing in the title. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was really great. And I'm like super excited that this is a show that I'm going to like and that I'll get to get on board the glow train, as it were.
Right. Yeah, but why don't you go next? You picked it from our list of submissions.
I feel like this is very much in your wheelhouse. And then after you're done, I can nod sagely and say, yes, I agree.
When people from time to time ask me, what show do you wish you had written? I always say Glow. And I was an original fan of Glow back in the 80s. I actually would stay up every Saturday night to watch the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. Aww. And so when I heard that they were developing this show, I was like, I was freaking out. I was like, I'm the prime demographic and I'm either going to love this or I'm going to hate it because they didn't do my ladies justice. And I think it's just amazing. I love it so much. And I do, Tara, I have to quibble with you on one point.
Okay.
In defense of the episode, I actually do love the Sam and Rhonda scenes.
Okay.
Because I think Kate Nash just disappears into that role. Like, yeah. I completely buy her as this, like what is she? Like, just this, like, sort of, like superficial, like, desperate, like, British idiot. And... I also buy her as being completely talentless, which is fascinating because in real life she is such a great performer.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think she's great. And I also like you guys, Marc Maron has just completely won me over on this show. I think my favorite last night definitely was my favorite or last night. My favorite, part of this episode was, his commentary on the amazing tag team match. Yeah, the helter skelter thing. Like at one point he said something like, he was like, looks like the blacks are winning. He just says like, or like when he tells the girls, like who's in the audience, he was like, it's 20 or 30 people, freaks, homeless. Like he kills me. I actually didn't know he had the chops, you know, before I watched this, cause I never watched Maron on IFC.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just, and also like, I've never related to a character more than Sheila, the She-Wolf, lying on the bed, playing Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And like simultaneously in between getting clues correct, suggesting that Ruth go kill a cat to make a traditional Russian hat. And just so completely nonchalant about both those things. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this show. I think this is probably the best episode that they've done. So obviously I'm like pro canon.
Yay.
Nice.
Dave.
Okay. I totally agree with everything.
Sage nodding.
A couple random notes then to add to this, a second great win for Stan Bush after, Boogie Nights, after they did, I Have the Power.
Yeah.
Yep. This is the second Transformers soundtrack win for Stan Bush with Dare on this one. The other musical note, I guess, is that the Exodus theme is what Sheila was playing on the keyboard the whole time. The first 10 bars of that she only knew. And then that was what they bring out at the end of the triumphant rap at the end.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about Glow, and I kind of feel like in this one case, like I'm really glad Netflix exists because they've brought so much quality television to our eyeballs, but I feel like this show didn't get as much buzz as it deserved, and I think this show would have really benefited from a slow rollout, like a non-Netflix
on HBO
dump. It just feels like it could have built momentum. If Netflix, you need other tips, just let me know. Even at cold.fyi. What I like about Glow is that it manages to be serious without being serious. I think it's more effective, you know, because of that, all the things it wants to say about where women are at the 80s and, you know, where the league is throughout the season. I think it just works better that way. And I kind of think there's always a temptation to play it bigger. I don't know if Ruth would actually know the real name of the Russian hat. That she actually...
I believe that she would go to a library and look it up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Based on what we know about Ruth, I believe she's that much of a keener.
I feel like a better thing, because the other two wrestlers in the room were watching Jeopardy, that one of them would have corrected her. Because, like, they're, like,
oh, huh. Yeah.
You know? But anyways, really great episode of a great first season of a very promising show. I am into it, and I think you're right, Tara. There is something much more fulfilling, or, you know, there's just something extra about women's sports stories than men's, just because, you know, there's less of them. I guess that makes them more special, but especially when it's like such a niche market like wrestling.
Dave, I'm going to let you in on something. Yeah. Women are more interesting than men.
Generally, I would agree. So with that, let's put it to a vote. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes, or excuse me, duh.
Diablo Cody, what vote you?
Absolutely.
And I'm going to say yes, too. So that makes it 3-4-3. That means GLOW, Season 1, Episode 7, live studio audience. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has our winner.
I certainly do. Dolly Parton, who I hope... names this series something that qualifies her for the Menin Index. Netflix has ordered an anthology series based on her songs. She has had a couple of like Christmas movies based on her songs or her songbook. They've done pretty well. I think that's what this is based on, but those were for like Hallmark or ABC Family. And this is
NBC, I think the most recent ones.
Yes, you're right. So I'm interested to see what becomes of this. Like, is this going to be a sort of Ryan Murphy type of a thing, or is this going to be a you know, the Wedding March movie type of a thing? I'm going to watch either way because she is great and a very smart writer. And so all y'all Dolly Parton fans, get out your coats of many colors because this is happening.
Loser of the week.
Well, we have a new shade of disgrace for men in the public eye. Jesse Williams, everyone's formerly favorite woke bae, star of Grey's Anatomy, is in the middle of getting divorced from his wife, whose name is Erin Drake, and has decided the way to go about it is to publicly shit on her and call her greedy for her requests for support of their child. Not a great look for anyone, and especially not for him, who's cultivated an image of like being very progressive and correct and... gross. This is gross.
Speaking about things that are progressive and correct, do you know what time it is? It's game time. All right, everybody. This is the 7th game time of the season. Scores currently are Tara with 4 points, Sarah with 2 points. Value guests still looking to get on the board. That means with a win today, Tara could clinch the season.
Oh.
In honor of our guest's nom de plume, today we're playing the ultimate pit of darkness. Jeez. In which we will challenge your knowledge of TV devils, demons, and imps. The rules
oh,
are
no.
simple. I am going to play you a clip of some sort of hell spawn from a TV show, and you're going to tell me the TV show in question. That's all there is to it. Sarah has 6 questions, Tara has 6 questions, and Diablo has 6 questions today. The imps of hell have run away with all your steel mills, so we're not using steel mills.
Oh!
You don't have to worry about all that nonsense.
Okay.
Please save your answer until after the clip has played. We have some long clips, we have some short clips, and also some of the clips I've edited for content, you know, because the answer was given away, or just because they were super duper long. All right?
Got it.
Any questions?
Are any shows repeated?
Yes, that is a good question. The answer is yes. Are we ready to play the pit of ultimate darkness?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you ready?
I am ready to serve you, Master. And Satan.
Who's going to go first?
We will start with Sarah.
All right. Our order is Sarah, Diablo, and Tara. Here we go. Sarah D. Bunting, here is your clip.
So, tell me what's been bothering you. Well, you see, Doc, it's been over 50 years already. It's been that long? Yes. You see, that's the actual problem. Once I eradicated all the time portals, I thought I would just wait it out, and then this summer, we don't say his name here. It is a safe place.
Yes. All right, for 1 point, name the show.
Samurai Jack.
Samurai Jack. That was a coup from Samurai Jack. You are correct. 1 point. All right. Woo. Diablo, here is your first clip.
It's always the one you least suspect. Now, just sign here. Careful, hot pen.
Who's that goat-legged fellow? I like the cut of his jib.
Prince of Darkness, sir. He's your 11 o'clock.
For 1 point, name the show.
It's The Simpsons. Come on.
Yeah. Hey.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Cigars are evil, you won't miss them. We'll find ways to simulate that smell. What a sorry fella, rolled up in smoke like a granitella. Here on level one of robot hell. Gambling's wrong and so is cheating. So is forging phony IOUs. Let's let Lady Luck decide what type of torture's justified. I'm Pit Boss here on level two. Ooh, deep fried robot.
Futurama.
Futurama is correct. All right, everybody's first question answered correctly. All tied up. Second clips coming your way, Sarah D. Bunting.
Why'd you run away? Don't you like my style? Why don't you come and play? I guarantee a great big smile. I come from the imagination, and I'm here strictly by your invocation. So what do you say? Why don't we dance a while?
For 1 point, name that show.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Once more with feeling, correct.
Woo!
All right. Second clip for Diablo.
This is Vonda Braithwaite, the plaintiff. She sold her immortal soul to the devil in return for success in her hairdressing business. But now claims that the devil cheated her. She seeks nullification of the contract plus damages. This is Mephistopheles, the devil. He claims that he did keep his part of the bargain and that the plaintiff is simply trying to welch out of her legal commitment. He seeks the soul plus court costs.
What's that show?
Was that like vintage SNL?
That it was.
Yay! Oh, okay. All right.
Mephistopheles.
Nice.
Well done. All right, Tara.
We took it to you. You couldn't get it out of your zone all night. We were aggressive. We didn't let you penetrate.
Yeah, all right, that's enough out of you. There's still three more games left in this series, my friend, and it's far from being over. Very far from being over. What the?
Hey, what are you doing? Watch where you're driving, man. Don't mess with the devil, buddy. We're number one. We beat anybody. We're the devil. The devil.
I didn't get until the end. That's Seinfeld.
Correct.
I beloved David Putty.
David Putty as a New Jersey Devil fan. Correct. All right, back to Sarah.
This is a villain so evil, so sinister, so horribly vile that even the utterance of his name strikes fear into the hearts of men.
The only safe way to refer to this King of Darkness is simply him.
Huh. It's like on the tip of my tongue, and it's really going to bug me when I don't get it. So let's just say Benson.
It's an answer adjacent to your first answer of Samurai Jack.
Okay.
Him from the
Powerpuff Girls.
Right. Okay, that was our first incorrect answer of the game. Well done, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Here is
when I had to do it. Usually me.
You are an incorrigible romantic.
If you mean that I am in love with love, you are quite right.
Don't get me wrong. I find love very useful. Without love, there would be no temptation. In my business, I couldn't get along without it.
On the contrary, love is the creative energy of the universe. Without it, life would be hell, and you would have won long ago. Someday, when all mankind really learns to love, you will finally be destroyed.
I am not the one facing destruction here. Your time is almost up.
All right, some distinctive voices in that clip. Any idea what that show is, Diablo?
I have no clue.
No clue?
Sorry.
No problem. Oh. Pretty old show, but a classic
Fantasy
one.
Island.
Fantasy Island. That was Riccardo Montalban speaking.
Oh.
Any guesses who was playing Satan there?
No.
Roddy McDowell.
Sure.
Awesome.
And they were in the same scene, somewhere in the jungle, but they had a single flashlight from the floor shining on his face. It was perfect.
I'm like embarrassed that I didn't get Fantasy Island.
All right, Tara Ariano, here's your chance to pull ahead.
Okay.
Oh, man. I can't believe you figured it out. Oh, God. You ruined everything. You know that?
The Good Place.
Oh, I'm going to give you a day point for Mennonizing
that.
And that takes us into our halfway score break.
I am the front man of evil, Bobby.
Can I please get the scores?
You can. It's a very close game. Sarah and Diablo tied with 2 points each. I have 3.
All right. There are 3 questions left for everybody. So still, anybody's game. We go back to Sarah D. Bunting for her 4th clue.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm the devil. And you've earned eternal damnation for your lifetime of evil deeds. Spitting off the escalator just clinched it. Okay, let's just pull up your file here. Okay. Seems to be a mistake. According to this, you're not due to arrive here until the next time the Yankees win the pennant. That's nearly a century from now.
I mean, is that The Simpsons again?
Indeed it is. Well done. All right, back to Diablo Cody.
Mike, can you hear me? Catch you with my death bag. You may think I've gone insane, but I promise I will kill again.
Creepy dude from a creepy show. Any idea?
That was scary as hell. Is it the X-Files?
Oh, that is a good guess. It definitely had some X-Filian audio qualities to it.
I'm sure it wasn't a good guess. I just do not know what that was.
No, I think you're. I think that was a good guess. Anybody have a clue what that is? Want to guess?
No.
That was Bob from Twin Peaks.
Oh, Twin Peaks, that was my other idea. Oh, okay.
No. So that is a good guess.
Yeah.
All right,
around
Tatar.
The same time. Yes.
What the hell is this?
The man with the ink is Derek McCarthy. In life, he was a gang leader, cop killer, general all-around psycho with a thirst for violence. As you can see, for you, a little welcome home gift. Oh, you look like a fairy princess.
What is it?
A cattle prod. You know, it may not look impressive, but it packs quite a zap.
And I'm supposed to catch that behemoth with just this?
No, of course not. Don't be silly. You're supposed to catch all those behemoths with that.
All of them?
Hey, man. You're the one that wanted to go on vacation.
Reaper.
Nicely done. Short-lived show. So Tara's ahead by 2 points. So everybody's got to be on their game to force a tie. Here is Sarah's next clue.
It's over. Drive away.
I can't do that. It's just too, tempting. I got an angel on the brink ready to fall.
I have no intention of falling.
You walked away, Monica. You turned your back on God.
I turned my back on humanity.
No such thing. Humans, yes.
Humanity? No.
I need to think things over alone.
Now, Sarah, there's a voice in there you may recognize from a show I know you're still watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucifer? I don't know.
Incorrect.
Is anybody it dead like me?
No, it's not. But that's a very good guess. Is in fact Mandy Patinkin from Touched by Angel, where he played Satan.
Amazing.
And he was thin,
Monica,
and looking styling. He was like doing the whole black thing before, you know, that was the thing with Regis and everybody.
Sure.
Like it was tight, guys. It was real tight. All right, Diablo, you gotta get this.
Okay.
Hey, he isn't hurt. He took a dive. He threw the fight.
Yeah.
Fools. You're all fools. Of course I took a dive. Don't you see? Who do you think was the one person that bet on Jesus to win? Me, you idiots! And now I will take all your hard-earned money and return to hell a much richer prince of darkness in life and real estate. Ha 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 ha!
I don't believe this.
Yeah, what a mean thing to do.
What's that show?
South Park.
South Park.
Yes.
All right.
Hey.
All right, Tara, if you get this, you will already have clinched the game and the season, but let's see if you get it. Here's your clip.
Oh, you could do that. I can murder you both and end all life in the universe. You make it in my image better than Dad ever could. I'm thinking, fire-breathing dragons, sassy-talking robots. I might give humans another chance if they know their place and worship me.
What's that show?
I'm going to guess Supernatural?
You are correct.
Hey!
Nice guesswork. All right, that clinches you the game, but everybody's got one last question left, so let's do it because I clipped them, and there's a couple real gems here. Sarah D. Bunting, your sixth clue.
I don't want to die.
Same as everyone.
I am not the same as everyone. This could be a big ticket night for you, Papa. I'm Queen of the Witches.
I don't give a wet donkey shit about your title. I shine to only one thing. Your soul.
Then let's talk business.
That has to be American Horror Story Coven, right?
Yes, indeed.
The great
it does.
Lance Reddick.
Yeah. Papa Legba. All right, this is Yabo's last clue, and it is a doozy.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Come on, guys, we gotta go.
It's my fault.
Hey,
you stay here. I'm going.
No. Deal's a deal. You're both going. What's going on around
now,
here?
Maybe you didn't understand me, but
I have to take them.
Over my dead body.
And mine too.
Me too.
This is the weirdest flu I ever saw. But I gotta tell you something, that goes double for us.
You heard him, bucko.
That's it for you guys. Going down.
Beelzebub. We're still here. Beelzebub.
It's not working, is it? Beelzebub.
Well.
Malvin.
Looks like we knew what to do, huh? Looks like the angel was right, huh? Looks like we had the answer. Well, I wanted to tell you guys. Very simple. The only thing that can beat the devil. L-O-V-E. Love.
Nobody loves me.
Beelzebub.
All right. Any guesses
was that
show?
Was that Happy Days?
That is Happy Days.
Oh my God.
Yeah. What? Chachi loses his soul to a Halloween devil named Marvin Scratch.
Who's a character.
But it turns out he actually was from hell. And Fonzie saves the day with love.
Thanks, Fonzie.
L-O-V-E.
Right. Tara, here's your last one. And again, a long clip. And it is also totally awesome. Identify the show.
I'm the same as the first time I met you.
Then why don't you go ahead and kill yourself?
And send you back to heaven a failure? You'll never become an angel.
Rachel.
What makes you think I'm from heaven?
Oh my God, what a nightmare.
You thought it was a dream?
Come on. Nobody loves you. They all ran off on you. Why take any more? Go on. Pull that trigger. Just one shot. That's all it'll take.
I have so many guesses, but I'm going to play the odds and say Highway to Heaven?
Incorrect. Shit. Before anybody else
The Incredible
guesses.
Hulk? That was one of my backup guesses.
This was the series finale of a TV show, and I'm going to play you a little bit of the end of the clip again, as aired on TV as you go into the end credits, because it is magnificent. That was JR meeting Joel Grey as the devil, getting him to commit suicide at the end of the original run of Dallas.
Jesus Christ.
That is almost as bad as the transition.
So it just goes on. God. And I cut a lot out of that clip, too. That was a good 3 minutes before I cut it down. All right, that is everybody's questions. Tara, let's get the final scores, please.
Okay, it could not have been closer. Sarah and Diablo, 4 points each. I had 5.
You do win the season. Before we celebrate that, I am going to play the tiebreaker here. And it will be worth 1 steel meal, good for your team, at the start of the next season. Letting you know right now, it is short, less than 4 seconds long. After it is done, first person to shout out the correct TV show will win the steel meal for their team. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Here we go.
You want to try poker?
Still say it's weird without the kittens.
Buffy!
Buffy, kitten poker, you are correct. And Tara...
Tara!
Congratulations on the win today and the win for the season.
History repeats itself. Try and you succeed.
You're the best around.
Around.
Nobody ever gonna keep it down. You're the best around.
Everyone shitting their pants.
Nobody ever keep it down. You're the best
Everybody shit their pants. Congratulations, Tara.
Metaphorically, at least.
All right,
good job, Tara.
Thanks.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We rose to the occasion of the Bachelorette's 14th question mark. What season? Before going around the dial with stops at Dietland, Jersey Shore, The Tale, and Succession. Tara pile drive the cannon into submission with Glow's live studio audience. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Hellish Game Time and the season. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
thank you, places.
Sarah D. Bunting,
boom, Cassio City,
and Diablo Cody.
Bye, Menon.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Come on, why can't you embrace the, like, do-it-yourself charm, huh? The Mickey and Judy putting on a show in the barn kind of feeling.
Yeah, if only I were on that much speed.
has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.